ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Well, they've done it. The Artemis II astronauts have successfully looped around the moon
and travelled the furthest humans ever have from Earth.
It's extraordinary to be on the far side of the moon right now, just see it hanging out there and looking back at the Earth.
I'm ABC science reporter Jacinta Bowler.
And I'm Belinda Smith. This is Artemis Explained, a daily podcast following the Artemis II mission to the moon and back.
For science fiction on ABC Radio National.
Integrity from Earth, our single system, fragile and interconnected, we copy.
All right, Jacinta, it's been a really big day.
Huge day.
Mission in under a minute. Can you do it? I have a microphone stock here ready to throw at you at the 60-second mark in case you go over.
Wow, I see how it is.
So let's see if you can do it. Go.
Okay. All right. So the Artemis II astronauts flew around the moon. Very exciting. They broke the distance record while they were doing that. They ate an absolutely wild lunch. So many different things. It was ridiculous. There was also a really beautiful moment where the crew suggested they name a crater after Reid Wiseman's late wife. We'll talk about that in a bit. And then after that, they lost signal for 40-ish minutes. But it's okay. It was supposed to happen. They came back again. And they've been up for ages already, but there's no bedtime for the astronauts until about 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. And I reckon you'd be too jazzed to sleep. You'd be so hyped having seen this moon all day.
That's great. That is well and truly under 1 minute. I will put this microphone sock down for another day.
Aw. One day it's going to happen, but today is not the day.
Today is not the day. No. So the flyby has flown by.
Yay.
Give me some stats, Jacinta.
Yes. Let's start with numbers. The team ended up 406,771 kilometres away from Earth, which is about 6,000 kilometres further than the Apollo 13 mission. So they absolutely smashed past that, did a really good job. They also ended up about 6,545 kilometres from the lunar surface, which is quite far away. And as we've spoken about before, it was about the size of a basketball held out at arm's length.
And so the flyby itself took about 7 hours. What were the astronauts doing that entire time?
Yeah, it's a really long time.
It's a whole workday.
Yeah, and they're basically just staring at the moon. Scientifically staring at the moon, of course. So they have these cameras, these very long lens cameras that they've been using to snap photos. There's another astronaut there that's also looking at it with their eyes and taking visual notes. And then they swapped halfway through as well. So, but they actually said it was quite difficult on their eyes because it was so bright that they were actually struggling to, you know, look down at their notes and then back up at the moon and kind of adjust to it so they could see all these little features. It didn't seem as easy as you might imagine to stare at something for a few hours.
It does sound quite tiring to, because it's also a really high pressure situation. It's not like they can come around the moon and then go back for another lap. This is a one and done situation for these astronauts.
Yeah.
So they got to get it while they can.
If they miss it, that's it.
I just had an overwhelming sense of being moved by looking at the moon. It lasted just a second or two, and I actually couldn't even make it happen again. But something just drew me in suddenly to the lunar landscape, and it became real.
I mean, that sounds so emotional and evocative. But that wasn't the only sort of emotional time during the flyby, was it?
Yeah, there was this huge moment where Jeremy Hansen said over the radio that the team had suggested names for two recently discovered craters on the lunar surface. One of them, Integrity, for the Integrity capsule, which they're obviously on, and one for Reid Wiseman's late wife.
A number of years ago, we started this journey in our close-knit astronaut family, and we lost a loved one. There's a feature in a really neat place on the moon, and it is on the near side, far side boundary. And so at certain times, we will be able to see this from Earth. And so we lost a loved one. Her name was Carol, the spouse of Reid, the mother of Katie and Ellie. And it's a bright spot on the moon. And we would like to call it Carol. And you spell that C-A-R-R-O-L-L.
It was really emotional. You could see that all of the astronauts got a bit teary. Reid and all of the others all got into a big hug, and it was just really beautiful to watch.
Mm. After that lovely moment, it was time for the science. Mm. What does the far side of the moon look like?
Well, we're going to have much more understanding of this in the next few days. We could see it on the live stream, but the live stream wasn't super high quality. Instead, we kind of only have what the astronauts were telling us. And they said that it's surprisingly greeny and browny.
Wow.
Yeah, which you don't really expect.
I mean, it looks grey to me.
It does.
Ray just passed me a note that the Oriental Basin annular ring has a similar albedo to the center, but a different color. It has more brownish tones in it. And he said it's very distinct now that he's been staring at it.
I think even the science team were quite surprised at that particular description. There was also a moment where Victor Glover said that some features and the peaks of those features, like, you know, craters and things like that, were so bright that it looked like it had snow on it.
Unlikely, though.
Yeah, of course. I want to stress that this is what it looked like.
Yes.
There is probably not snow on the far side of the moon in that particular area.
The astronauts were told very explicitly to just say what they saw.
Yeah.
And so if that's what Victor Glover saw, it looked a bit like snow, then that's what he saw.
And that's why you want actual people up there, don't you? You want them describing these things. And it was really beautiful to have Victor especially, but all of them had these beautiful descriptions of what they were seeing, and it was really touching to hear it all.
And it was interesting to hear them talk about the difference between their view with their eyes and what they could see through the digital cameras. It was different. It was different enough that they were like commenting on it. So all this talk about seeing things with human eyes, it's quite an obvious difference to the astronauts on board, what they're seeing through a viewfinder versus what they're seeing with their peepers.
If you've ever seen the spotlight off the top of the Luxor at night in Las Vegas, this looks like what that wants to be when it grows up.
Integrity Science, glad to hear you're following your training of tell it like you see it.
And hopefully that answers a question that was posed to us by Robin, who's 8 years old, who asked, during the flyby, why are there two people looking out into the moon with one person looking with their eyes and one person looking with a camera instead of only the camera?
The science team also said that they were quite excited to see the different perspectives of all of the four astronauts as well.
Mm. Another thing is the astronauts could describe the same feature over time. So as the spacecraft moved around the moon, and the angle of the sun moved so slightly, they could pick up new details, maybe see different changes in shading and colour, that kind of thing. These kinds of things that you can verbalise, which may not be captured so much with a camera.
Houston copies. We'll see you on the other side.
We will see you on the other side.
Now, during the mission, there was a chunk of time where we didn't hear anything at all from the Integrity capsule. Why was that?
Yeah, so we did know this was happening. It wasn't a surprise, thank goodness. So we lost the astronauts for about 40 minutes as they went around the far side of the moon. You can't go through the moon with communications. There are certain ways that you get around it if there was some kind of satellite on the other side or on the side, but they didn't have that in this case. So they just took the 40-minute chunk. And for future missions, I imagine they'll be, hopefully, we'll be able to get something on the far side of the moon so this kind of thing doesn't happen again.
And something else that happened right at the end of the flyby was the astronauts got to experience a solar eclipse, but not one that we're familiar with on Earth.
Because of the way the spaceship lined up, when it came around the back of the moon, it ended up in a position where the moon was covering the sun. And so all they could see was this dark moon with, you know, a little bit of sun as it's coming behind it. And then you can see a slight pinpoint of Earth in the background.
And having that moon backlit like that, I heard one of the astronauts talking about seeing micrometeorites struck the moon's surface. Amazing that A, they could see it, and B, that it happens often enough that they could see it during a few hours flyby.
Yeah. And they do, like on Earth, get to wear eclipse glasses so that they don't hurt their eyes.
Safety first.
And we copied all. We wanted to remind you at this point on the eclipse glasses. Should be about time for those.
Houston, we copy all. We are in eclipse glasses. That was an absolutely spectacular, magnificent experience.
Thanks for the report. We sure wish we were there with you.
And the timing of the launch was specifically so they could experience this kind of eclipse, wasn't it?
Yeah, when they first had the mission objectives, I don't think that eclipse was something that they expected to be doing. It was only because of the timing and the way that the actual spacecraft just happened to be that they were able to add it. And here's what our moon expert, Dr. Kelsey Young, had to say about it.
you know, I was asked a lot in the weeks leading up to the launch, well, what's your favorite day? And my answer truly was, there is no bad day to launch to the moon. We were going to get great science out of it no matter what. But it's a really neat opportunity to, you know, bring the sun into the picture, bring different planetary bodies into the picture while still literally keeping the moon in center stage.
As days go, you probably can't top the day that they just had. But the eclipse specifically really got to Commander Reed Wiseman. He was completely lost for words.
Houston, if you could give me about 20 new superlatives in the mission summary for tomorrow, that'll help my vocabulary out a bit. Thank you.
I mean, it all sounds amazing, right? And it all sounds it went fairly smoothly. Were there any issues?
Yeah, I think overall it was an extremely successful day. But as always, you're always going to have a few things that maybe aren't ideal. The first thing is that Earth was very bright and they actually needed to put a shirt over a window to make sure that they could still see the moon in all of its glory. And then the shirt got too hot. So they then needed to change and reposition the shirt so that it didn't get too hot. Could you imagine just heating up in there, getting really warm?
Well, it was a problem that was bad enough that Mission Control actually requested that they take the shirt off. And the astronauts were like, well, it's so bright, it's actually impairing our vision. We can't see the moon as clearly as we'd like to. So they managed to cobble together a bit of a solution involving some airflow and, like you said, moving the shroud, as they called it, back a little bit from the window so it didn't heat up too much. What else happened?
Oh, yes. And obviously we have a toilet update as per usual. Earlier today, they had a no-go for use. Not ideal.
What does that mean?
On the mission, they use go to mean okay and they mean no-go to mean bad.
Sure. Who's saying no-go though?
Oh, Mission Control decided that they were not able to use it. Hopefully it has been fixed now. We don't know why the toilet had a no-go signal. Potentially it may have been something to do with the ice issues in the pipes. If they hadn't faced it towards the sun enough, potentially it might have iced up again.
So that's preventing the liquids from being expelled into space.
Exactly, right. Yes. And so if that's not done, then you get a blockage. But fingers crossed, they've been able to fix that now. And if not, I hope they've got things to put their pee in.
Plenty of bags.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, and before we finish, I need to talk about the mission patches because this was a really cool moment. So we've spoken about the mission patches before. They're very important. They go on all of the astronauts' stuff. Do you remember what the mission patch looks like?
Oh, it's like a triangle with a couple of corners cut off. There's a small Earth in the background and a larger moon in the foreground and an A for Artemis and then two, but as in Roman numerals.
Yes.
Have I succeeded?
Nailed it. Yes. You did.
It's got their names on it too.
Yes, it does. Yeah. But when they came back into comms range after the 40-minute blackout, Mission Control all flipped their mission patches over and on the other side, there was a secret second side. I know. This has Earth in the foreground and the moon in the background. So they've swapped those over because they're coming home.
Oh, an Easter egg, but just a little bit late for Easter.
It's so beautiful. I really want one.
Integrity Houston, in Mission Control, all of your flight controllers and your flight director have flipped their Artemis II patches around. We are earthbound and ready to bring you home.
So they're heading back to Earth now. It's going to take a few days for them to get back to Earth.
Yes.
What's planned?
So right now, Integrity is being swung around the moon. It's leaving the lunar sphere of influence around 3:30 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday, and then it's back to Earth. There's actually not much they need to do between now and when they get home. They get to just chill for a few days.
I mean, sounds quite pleasant. Now, we've had a question from Miles, who's six. And he asks, how do the Orion rockets steer the capsule around the moon from when they leave Earth?
So the answer is our favourite, gravity. Everyone's favourite.
All our favourites.
Yes. The translunar injection burn got them into the moon's gravitational pull. And for the most part, the moon actually does a lot of the work here. So it helps them around the moon. They don't actually need to steer. They don't need to do any extra burns. The way that they've set this up, like I said, the speed and the direction, they've perfectly timed this so that they just go around without anything else, no steering required, and then head straight back to Earth. But I will say they may have to make slight changes. So Orion's propulsion system can be used to accelerate or decelerate the spacecraft in certain directions. So if there's tiny little changes that need to be done, that's what they would do then.
And how do NASA scientists figure all this out?
Ah, Maths. Ah. Lots of maths. And usually it happens before the mission has started. Hmm. We can expect that the astronauts are going to be in space for another couple of days. We've got Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday they're going to splash back down into Earth.
That's Australia time.
That is Australia time, yes. It does get confusing otherwise.
Now let's keep going with letters. And we actually have one from Miles's mum, Georgia. And she asks, when the pilot took over for a period of manual control, what did he do?
Now, I have a confession to make, Belle.
Go on. This is a safe space.
So I made a mistake in the last episode. It wasn't actually Victor who did the manual control yesterday. He is the pilot. You would assume he would be the one to do it.
Yeah.
So him and Reed are doing some pilot demos on day 8 of the flight. The test that happened yesterday was Christina and Jeremy.
So what did the test actually involve?
Yeah, so they won't be doing any burns because they've only got a couple of those and they're very specified to be able to do certain things. Instead, they'll look at how the ship moves in space. So maybe they'd spin the craft around, but they're not going to be doing anything that's going to actually interfere with the mission.
Right, so they're not going to steer off course for any reason.
No.
Now, I've got a question also from Annabelle from Canberra, and she asks, this is a good one. What time zone do astronauts use when they're in space? Is there like a central moon time?
I wish there was a central moon time. Their days have been planned out to a T. You can find spreadsheets online that tell you exactly where they're going to be and when. And that is all done in coordinated universal time. And the reason they do this is because it's not set at a location and you don't have to worry about having one person doing it in UTC, another person doing it in Australian Eastern Standard Time and causing problems.
Finally, we have an email from Christine, and she says it's more of an observation than a question. What gives me pause for thought is each time you acknowledge the traditional owners, you're noting the oldest surviving culture while also discussing astronauts flying around the moon. What an amazing scope of human endeavour.
Thanks, Christine.
Well said.
How lovely. If you have a question or an observation like Christine, please send them to us, sciencefriction@abc.net.au.
Science signing off and can't wait to talk to you tomorrow morning.
This episode was made on the lands of the Wurundjeri and Gadigal people and produced by Shelby Trainer. I'm Belinda Smith.
And I'm Jacinta Bowler. See you later, Lunar Crater.